My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
So I often do this thing where I mentally compare national parks to Disney movies in my head. It's just this thing my brain kind of instinctively does. It's really more like an uncontrollable impulse of mine, I guess.
I mean, that makes sense considering national parks and Disney World are two of our favorite places.
Yeah, definitely true. Our top two. And when I was hiking through Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park in western Colorado, I kept thinking it kind of reminded me of Maleficent's castle in Sleeping Beauty with all these like twisted, gnarly trees especially. And then, of course, the pitch blackness of the canyon. So deep, so steep, it's constantly shrouded in its own shadows.
Yeah, it's a really hauntingly beautiful place. I mean, it's intimidating in all the right ways.
Yes. And instead of fairies, though, it's adorable black bear cubs.
Fortunately, no curses, no sleeping, just pure beauty.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
We packed up our loft in Chicago, moved into an RV, and now we're traveling the country full-time visiting America's national parks. Today, we're talking about Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park in Colorado.
Thanks for listening.
The diversity of Colorado's national parks really just astounds me. Right before this, we were in Mesa Verde National Park, as I'm sure you remember, because you're obsessed with that place.
Yes, and I think we talked about that in episode 3, right?
We did. You were so excited to do so. But even though that park is only a few hours from here, it totally feels like another part of, like, the galaxy entirely compared to Black Canyon.
Yeah, we had a few weeks in between my work events, and our trip to the Black Canyon came in between Albuquerque and Wyoming. We had about a month to kill in Colorado, and what a better excuse to visit national parks.
Yeah, seriously. And honestly, if we're going to, like, kill a month in any state, it's good to do it in Colorado. There's really an endless array of things to do and places to go and trails to hike. Such a beautiful, diverse state. It really is.
Yes, it is. So Black Canyon of the Gunnison actually gets its name from the Gunnison River that carved it and the fact that the canyon walls are so dark. It's just so beautiful because it's like located near this small town of Montrose where we stayed at the KOA campground for a few nights.
Yeah, this was honestly one of the most convenient towns I think we've ever stayed in near a national park. It was literally like 15 minutes from our RV to the national park entrance. So easy. And also in the town, there was a good amount of places to eat and visit as well to keep us busy and entertained in between the national park. So that was great and kind of surprising because I wasn't expecting much. They also had a rental car facility that made it especially easy for us to get around while we kept the RV parked at the campground.
Yeah, because some parks aren't like as accessible for larger vehicles, and this is one of them for sure. The roads are mostly, like, quite small, and they're narrow, and, you know, there's lots of winding routes and steep grades, and the visitor center parking lot is so tiny. There was barely any room at all.
Yeah, it definitely filled up really quick. I remember the first day I went to Black Canyon, I was in the rental car. I went by myself while you were getting some work done, and I guess it was this kind of inadvertent reconnaissance trip as well, because I had no idea through my research. I didn't know the roads were so narrow, and I didn't know the parking lots were so small. So thank goodness we had this car. So I was like, oh, wow, good to know, because the RV would, like, not work out very well here unless we woke up the crack of dawn and, like, took up five parking spaces. The bane of everybody's existence there, I'm sure.
Right. I know. I'm usually one doing the driving and the gas pumping and the hookups and even the maintenance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even though I'm not much of a help with RV, I think it's payback for all those times I brought you coffee and donuts from Dark Matter in Chicago. So we can just call it even.
Sure. Okay. We're even.
Yes. I mean, over the years, I probably spent I invested like $1,000 in donuts at Dark Matter.
You know, that's actually very true. I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised, as embarrassing
as that
is.
Probably like $8 a day.
Yeah. That's the coffee there is not cheap. The donuts are not cheap.
But they're sure as
but they're good.
Heck worth it.
And I made a habit of it, for better or worse. But anyway, Montrose was surprisingly wonderful, like I said, and we'll talk more about that later. So stay tuned for that. But first, I think we should dive in and start with some of the geological background of Black Canyon first and what forces were involved in shaping this cavernous behemoth.
Geology.
Yeah, when most people think of the canyons and national parks, they obviously think of the Grand Canyon, which looks nothing like the Black Canyon. I mean, they're totally different environments, sizes, shapes, and despite the fact that they were shaped the same way, they are all very different.
Right, right. You know what I'd love to see? I'd love to see one of those, like, Us Weekly-style show-offs of, like, who wore it best, Canyon Edition, a little, like... Yeah, between Grand Canyon and Black Canyon.
No.
I'm there for it.
But really, they're just hard to compare between the two because they look nothing alike. I mean, the only thing they really have in common is these raging rivers. And I really do mean they're raging. Like, you can hear these suckers from all the way at the top of the canyon, and they're almost ear-piercing up there.
Yeah, raging feels almost like an understatement. It's like a furious river. Like, yeah,
so furious.
Yeah, you can never underestimate the power of water. This stuff will mess you up. And just seeing what it does to, like, rock is really incredible. The fact that a river can look so thin and tiny from afar and still have the strength to chisel this jagged canyon is unbelievable.
Yeah, no, this didn't happen overnight, though. I mean, it took a cool 2 million years to get the Gunnison River to carve this canyon into the depths of these Colorado rocks. I think it goes at a rate of 1 inch per 100 years.
It's a little slow, but, you know, it's faster than what I would be able to accomplish for sure if I was carving this myself.
This is a canyon, Fast and Furious style.
Yeah, sure. But it does take time to whittle through these. Some of the rock here is so hard. Like, there's Precambrian gneiss and schist that's billions of years old. And you can't rush these things. The carving of a canyon, in culinary terms, is more like a slow stew than a microwave meal, to be honest.
Ooh, or how about it's kind of like a Crazy Horse versus Mount Rushmore?
Oh, yeah. That's actually great. That's a much more beautiful metaphor.
Really excited about that one.
Yeah.
That was a good metaphor.
Yeah, we recently went to both of those, which is why it's fresh in your memory, probably.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know a lot about microwaving those meals on the RV, don't you?
Please don't out me like that. Just let me enjoy my Friezo Isle packaged dinners in peace and secrecy, please. No one needs to know that.
It's funny because we didn't even own a microwave in our loft in Chicago, and now we're making full use of the fact that we have our RV came with a microwave.
Yes.
I mean, it's great for Hot Pockets, popcorn, which you pretend not to, but you do secretly like.
I feel like our microwave is turning you against me. It's interesting. I'm getting thrown under the bus a lot here.
Anyways, let's get back on track here and get to the bottom of this canyon formation, but not literally the bottom because we were not brave enough to hike down there.
No, not this trip anyway. That seemed like an undertaking, to say the least.
Yeah, don't get any ideas. I know you love hiking and you'll do it.
Yeah, I really wanted to. One of the days we were here, I was seriously looking into it, but then different things I read and heard in the visitor center, I'm like, maybe another time. And we have more time here, and I'm not quite so scared. So, getting back to the river and the carving of the canyon, this thing, like we said, is a real beast. And the park doesn't contain the entire canyon length of this river, per se, but it has 12 miles of them. And these 12 miles are the most impressive.
so impressive. In fact, the park features the deepest sections of the canyon, and it's so steep that the canyon floor only gets 33 minutes of sunlight per day.
That's crazy. It sounds kind of depressing. Like, can you imagine living at the bottom of the canyon only getting 33 minutes of sunlight?
Yeah, it's like living in Alaska.
No, thanks. I know. It's like living in Alaska in winter, I guess. And it's kind of appropriate. In my research, I found this like hauntingly perfect quote from an author named Duane Vandenbosch, if I'm saying that right. He wrote this book called Images of America, The Black Canyon of the Gunnison. Mm-hmm. And in it, he says this quote, "Several canyons of the American West are longer and some are deeper, but none combines the depth, sheerness, narrowness, darkness, and dread of the Black Canyon."
Wow, that's a good quote.
Jeez, I know. It sounds like a scary story. I love it. So as you can kind of understand why I'm getting serious Maleficent Castle vibes from this.
Oh, yeah.
It really fits. And not only are the rock walls of the canyon dark to begin with, but the fact that this place is almost constantly immersed in its own shadow is why the Black Canyon has such a dark, ominous name befitting this Disney villain. So it all makes sense.
Yeah, so this river actually started raging 15 million years ago as a runoff from the La Salle Mountains and the West Elk Mountains. This is when it started carving its way into the ancient rocks, as well as a lot of volcanic ash in the region.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that this river is so fast-moving and strong made it possible to cut through a rock that's especially tough, even if the pace was kind of slow and took millions of years to do so. And coupled with the hardness of the rock, such a powerful roaring river is why this canyon got so steep over years.
Oh, that reminds me of that line from The Devil Wears Prada when Miranda says, "By all means, move at a glacial pace." You know how that thrills me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm totally imagining Miranda Priestly talking to this river. I can just like see her visiting Black Canyon. And I'm sure she would also love all the florals on the surface, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Very in season.
It's just beautiful because right around those, you get the river, which drops 34 feet per mile through the canyon. And it means it's a pretty steep descent within just the first few miles. But you see all the florals with that. I mean, it's just, you can't beat it.
It is, yeah, it's a nice juxtaposition because this canyon is so, like, jet black and kind of scary. It looks like an evil canyon. Not to like throw shade at it, because it has plenty of its own shade. That was a nice little joke.
Ooh,
I accidentally made.
I like how you're giving yourself kudos.
Yeah,
I gave myself kudos. You know, just go with it.
But yeah, this natural juxtaposition of this canyon just surrounded with these like bright, vibrant flowers, and then the greenery of the trees too up along the canyon rim is really quite nice and very unusual. I don't think I've ever been to a canyon like this before. Or definitely not one that's intimidating, that's for sure. So in regards to the canyon and just how steep and deep it is, the Black Canyon contains the fifth steepest drop for any mountain-fed river in all of North America. And to put that in a little bit of perspective, when you're comparing it to Grand Canyon again, the Colorado River in the Grand Canyon, in contrast, drops 7.5 feet per mile.
Whoa, that's
so,
a big difference.
Yeah, compared to 34 feet per the Black Canyon, that's a big difference. And I don't mean to keep turning this into an inadvertent competition between the two canyons, but that's why I'm like thinking this who wore it best thing is such a good idea. It basically writes itself.
Yeah, and considering all the beautiful patterns in the rocks here, I think it would be a really tough competition. Like the Painted Wall, which is the tallest cliff in Colorado.
Oh my God, yeah, that Painted Wall is magnificent. So gorgeous, so unique. It's this huge, broad cliff face that's striated with these lighter strips of rock, which are called pegmatite dikes. So the whole cliff almost looks like this gigantic zebra, except like instead of white, it's just like a lighter shade of black.
Yeah, and you can give me a more amazing view from the Painted Wall overlook on the South Rim Drive.
Yes, you have to do that. It's so easy. I mean, there are lots of overlooks just directly off South Rim Drive, and this is, I think, the best overlook that I saw. Of all, they're all amazing, like I said, but it's definitely worth grappling with traffic on that road to pull off at the Painted Wall overlook for sure.
Speaking of traffic, I think we have a traffic jam, and we're going to come back to you after this commercial break.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
And today we're talking about Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park in Colorado.
History.
Now that you know how steep and dark and raging this canyon is, you can understand why Native Americans and settlers were so intimidated by it and why they avoided it like the plague.
Yeah, this is definitely the type of canyon that really brings a screeching halt to any travel or expedition because it's almost a completely vertical drop off the canyon walls. So not great for horseback riders or like any living thing that doesn't fly.
Yeah. Yeah. The Ute Indians called the river Much Rocks Big Water, which is totally fits. I mean, the depth and the darkness of the canyon made them superstitious of it.
Yeah. They were right to be superstitious of it, I think. Something this treacherous is definitely worrisome. It looks like it, like I said, it looks like it could be an evil place. I totally understand.
Yeah, the first time anyone actually recorded any major exploration of this place was in 1853 by Captain John Williams, no other than Gunnison is his last name. So now you know where the river gets it.
Yeah, and much like Lewis and Clark, similar kind of exploratory fashion, he was leading an expedition from St. Louis to San Francisco, and when his party hit the canyon, it was basically this giant roadblock. So he wound up eventually just going way out of his way to travel around the south end of the canyon because it was just impassable.
Yeah, he wasn't the last person to meet up with the canyon, though. When we stopped at the visitor center in the South Rim, we learned more about the canyon exploration at the movie screening they were having.
Yeah, that was a really good movie, by the way, like especially good. I think it's one of the best national park movies we've seen, and we've seen a lot. We always make that a priority.
Yeah, it was filled with some fascinating information, and we had no idea about most of it, like how William Jackson Palmer spent a ton of time and money to build a railroad from Denver through the San Juan Mountains.
Yeah, I mean, quite an undertaking, and it did take a ton of time and money, of course, like more than a year to construct a 50-mile stretch through the canyon, which wound up costing about $165,000 per mile.
Oof.
And I mean, that's a lot of money, like, nowadays, but considering this was in the late 1800s, that's an overwhelming amount of money. I can't even fathom what that must have been like for them to even attempt.
Yeah, that's just crazy. And then in 1882, an engineer named Brian Bryant surveyed the entire canyon, though a lot of his crew gave up because they were actually too frightened of it.
Yeah, I get it. I would definitely do the same thing. They wound up building the rest of the railroad, again, around the south end of the canyon, which seems to be the go-to kind of alternative route. And in addition to miners riding it to Utah, it was also used as a luxury mode of travel for vacationers, including, shockingly, Rudyard Kipling.
Ooh, a nice little Disney connection there.
I know, right, yeah. so perfect. So he wrote it in 1889, and he was totally smitten with it. He loved it. I just wish he wrote a Jungle Book sequel called The Canyon Book or something.
Eventually, that drain line was taken apart in the 1950s, though, so there's no more of that today. And in the early 1900s, other surveyors began looking for ways to reroute some of the new river into nearby valleys to help with the irrigation and the farming.
Right, right, which is another fun fact we have zero idea about until the movie we watched at the Visitor Center. Someone really needs to give that movie, like, a belated Oscar or something. It's really very well done and super informative.
Yeah, and in that, we learned about Abraham Lincoln Fellows and William Torrens doing the exploring, and mm-hmm. they actually floated the entire canyon length of the river on a rubber mattress.
I can't.
I mean, wooden boats would have been just shattered in, by the rocks, and so they had to, like, come up with, you know, plan B.
Yeah, and they they did it. They went for it, which sounds like the most terrifying thing, but miraculously, the duo made it out safely on their mattress boat, and they were able to find sites in the canyon along the way to build this river diversion tunnel they were looking for, which is just totally crazy to think about how intense these explorations here have been over the years and the different techniques and attempts that were made from various groups. Like, wow.
Yeah, Black Canyon is not easy to navigate, and this just proves the incredible strength of nature.
It really does. Nowadays, no one's floating that river on a mattress. Instead, Black Canyon of the Gunnison was named a national monument in 1933 and upgraded to national park status in 1999, which I think is a very fitting finale for this ferociously beautiful place.
Trails.
Even though we didn't trek down into the canyon, we definitely did explore plenty on foot here.
Yeah, and it is really easy to do with a small rental car. And you don't even need to hike down in order to get to the canyon floor either, by the way. There's this long, winding, steep road that you can take down there as soon as you enter the park. It's called the East Portal Road, and you just take an immediate right pretty much after you go through the canyon or the national park entrance. And since the grade is 16% and the curves are so sharp, it's only recommended for small vehicles that can handle it.
Yeah, the RV would be impossible to do.
Impossible. I don't even know if they're, like, allowed. I think they probably have length.
Yeah, if you want to die, go for it.
Restrictions, right, because that's crazy. That wouldn't work at all. But it's definitely cool to get down there and gawk at the sheer walls and roaring white water. This area of the canyon isn't as deep as kind of the heart of the park. This is more towards the eastern end, but the views are no less impressive, and you really are quite a ways down, for sure. So you're deep in it and just surrounded by these soaring, jagged, dark walls.
Yeah, I mean, you can even picnic down there or fish. That's great as well. I mean, it's just a great setting for that.
Right, yeah. I mean, I would definitely picnic. I'm not much of a fisher, but another cool thing about the walls are a little bit more spread out down here, so you have more light. So, because I wouldn't really want to picnic in, like, darkness.
No.
So I'd rather just, like, hike and marvel at overlooks, too. So, and the best place to start for that is at the South Rim, which is by far the most visited section of the park and the one closest to where we're staying. This is also the section of the park where you take this East Portal Road, so we're kind of in the thick of it.
Yeah, I remember, like, parking at one of the overlooks because there was no parking spaces left at the visitor center, especially for the RV.
Mm-hmm.
And then just walking along the canyon rim to go see that movie and buy some souvenirs.
Yeah, so we're able to, like, find ways around this parking issue. And at this visitor center where the movie theater, at the visitor center, we were also able to find this larger National Parks passport book for me because I'm kind of maxing out mine and it's somewhat falling apart it's definitely,
you know,
in
I'm
the throes of overuse. Why?
Because you threw that sucker away.
I know. That was, I got excited and ambitious and I was like, yes, I need to upgrade to something larger, but then regretted it because I spent all this money on it and then resented it because I'm still attached to my original passport book.
Yeah, there's just so much history there for you.
Yeah, but even though it wound up being a waste, I really have no problem with giving more money to the National Park Service. I'm always happy to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the beautiful thing is right from the visitor center there, we got to do a few different trails, you know, because they're all, like, kind of connected in this giant loop that brought us back to the car where we actually started. But where we actually started this trail was the Rim Rock Nature Trail, which was flat and easy and only about 1 mile round trip by itself.
Yeah, definitely easy. And it connects right with a visitor center. So that's just a no-brainer. And I think we actually, before we got into the midst of the hiking, we went to this overlook that's a few steps down from the visitor center. And that was like our first, I think, awe-inspiring view. It was such a good view. It was kind of crowded. There was a lot of people there because it was right by the visitor center, but plenty of room for everybody. And the railing takes you pretty close to the edge. It's a little nerve-wracking. I was afraid to hold my phone up because I thought I would suddenly drop it, and then that's the end of that. So after we do this little overlook here, we continue on hiking, and we get more and more of these show-stopping canyon views along the way. It's just kind of nonstop into this jagged, dark canyon. None of it really looks like real life. It all just looks surreal.
Yeah, it really doesn't. I mean, it's just stunning. Mm-hmm. Like, it's probably one of the most beautiful places I've been. And I just love, again, how these trails connect. And, you know, the next trail that we started was that Oak Flat Top Loop Trail, which was a tiny bit tougher, though, since it's longer and has more elevation gain.
Yeah, so this one's about 2 miles total. And the thing that makes it a bit more challenging is that it dips below the canyon rim a little bit, which is awesome. You get a different perspective here. And it has more tree cover, which is a benefit, especially for hiking midday. And it's sunny and summery like when we were there. And there's lots of gorgeous aspen trees, oaks, giant boulders. It's really more of like the foresty area of the park that we experienced, with so many little nooks that give you these perfect panoramas of the canyon, too.
Yeah, I mean, you actually saw a bear there, right?
Yeah, yes. The first day when I came here and you were back at the RV working, I did this trail. So I wound up doing this trail twice. And towards the end of this Oak Flat Loop Trail, I saw my most exciting bear, like, sighting I've ever seen in any national park, I think.
Well, it was pretty close, too, right?
It was really close. Yeah, so I was on my way back up out of the canyon, and I saw this large animal kind of shuffling around in the corner of my eye, and I didn't think it was a bear at first. I probably assumed it was, I don't know, like a gopher or something. I don't know, like a big gopher. And so I look, and sure enough, it was this young black bear, like probably a cub. It was still pretty small and clearly young. So, and that's good, too, because I don't know if I would want to be that close to an adult bear. But,
right.
Yeah, it was close enough to be thrilling, but still adorable. Looks like a large teddy bear. We made sustained eye contact. We had a moment, and
you had a moment.
Yeah, just enough for me to take a few photos. And he was just so chill and patient, like, looked at me, posed, and then scampered off.
That's truly amazing. I mean, I'm really jealous that I didn't go that first day with you, because we didn't really get to see any animals when we hiked together.
No. Yeah, I don't think we did, aside from probably squirrels and chipmunks and whatnot. But we did see a warning sign on the side of the trail about aggressive deer in the area, which I think was just the adrenaline rush we needed. The mere prospect of being, I don't know, trampled by deer.
Yes, that's so exciting and exhilarating.
Yeah.
To just be trampled by deer to death.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep, that's what I think of when I think of fun.
Exactly.
But, you know, when we get done with that Oak Flat Loop Trail, the final portion of the trails that we did together was the Cedar Point Nature Trail, which is another flat and easy section that brought us back towards the parking lot.
Right, so this is like the last section of that loop. And this is, I think, the easiest part. This takes you out of the canyon, away from the canyon, so you don't really have any canyon views here. You cross the section of the road, actually,
yeah,
at one point, and then you go through this open meadow and some short, gnarly trees. And these are the trees that I was describing earlier. They're kind of scary, sharp-looking, tangly, and thick. These are the ones that felt like the ones that surround Maleficent's castle.
Yeah, I totally see what you mean, right, when you describe it that way. I mean, they were quite sharp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unmistakably Maleficent. And even though there isn't a lot of hiking trails here, like aside from this gigantic loop at Black Canyon, you definitely have to do the whole scenic drive along South Rim as well, because there are so many of those great overlooks And the drive is very doable in a smaller car, especially.
Yeah, around the top, there's just not a lot of trails.
Yeah, not so much, especially not really on the south rim.
Yeah, but one of the craziest things that came from these overlooks, you can actually see across the canyon to the north rim, where there's another, like, scenic drive and more trails that's actually super close. But since there's no bridge or anything connecting the two sides of the canyon, you actually need to drive a couple of hours around just to get there.
Right, just like all those early explorers who went all the way around the south end of the canyon, except much faster now because you're in a car. And I definitely did that. I remember carving out one day to explore the north rim, and I was excited because this side is much less crowded. It's out of the way, so there aren't as many people. The parking lots are much more open, and another bonus, the trails are longer, so it's really a win-win for me because I like long trails, and I do not like crowds.
Yeah, I remember, like, looking at your North Rim photos, and they were just absolutely stunning. I mean, you're going to have to post some of those on the Parklandia Pod Instagram.
Will do.
But it looks like there's a ton more elevation gain there.
Yeah. The trails on the North Rim feel very different from the trails on the South Rim. And I think the biggest example of that is the North Vista Trail, which is by far my favorite trail over there. It's about 7 miles round trip to the top of what's called Green Mountain. It didn't really seem like a mountain to me, more of this gigantic rocky hill. I don't know if it is a mountain or whatever. But I did the North Vista Trail to the top of this mountain, and it starts by the ranger station at the North Rim, weaves through a bunch of sagebrush, juniper forest, and then kind of steadily ascends up this mountain to a point that has incredible sweeping views. You're kind of above the tree, like there's no real trees blocking your view up there. And you can see down into the canyon, almost like the entire length of it, with these snowy mountains way off in the background.
Yeah, you also did that Dead Horse Trail, right?
I did, yeah. That one was a little bit shorter. It was about 5 miles round trip and a little trickier in the sense that it's a lot more exposed to the sun. The trail begins by this old, like, road. It used to be a dirt road for vehicle traffic. Now it's closed off just for hiking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then you go through the sloping meadow and then kind of up, down, eventually ending at an overlook of the east portal section of the canyon. So it's neat to see that area from a totally different vantage point, too, because that's where on the other side in the south rim you can drive down. So I was able to do that one day and then hike out to the Dead Horse Trail and see it from this angle. And it was great.
Food.
All right. So at the beginning of the episode, we said we'd like to talk more about the town of Montrose. That's where we were staying, and I just really loved it.
Yeah, the time has come to talk about Montrose. So when we were first driving in, I thought it would be kind of boring, kind of lackluster. I had very low expectations, but I am thrilled to report that Montrose blew those expectations out of the water. I really liked it there.
Yeah, especially that little, like, speakeasy cocktail bar, Filoni's.
Yeah, I think that's, so I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's like a combination of Phil and Melanie. I think it's the two owners. I remember reading it on their website.
That's right.
And loving that. It's really cute.
Yeah, we loved it so much, we actually went there 2 nights in a row.
I know, yeah. It was a total surprise, because you found it. You were, like, Googling bars or something, and you found this speakeasy bar. And I would never expect to see such a legit cocktail bar in a town this small.
Yeah, no, I really did love that. It was really cool, because when you walked in, you had to ring a doorbell, like a real doorbell, and then you had to give a password to get in. And I didn't know the password.
No, me neither. Yeah.
And the second night, I had found it on their Instagram.
Yes. Yes. I remember. So we didn't have the password. And they opened this little kind of window in the door. And
old school mafia.
Right. Yeah. It feels very mafia. And you're in the alley. And we're like, oh, we don't know. And she was like, well, tell me a joke. And I think you actually repeated your Mesa Verde joke.
Of course.
Right.
I definitely did.
Do you want to revive that right now?
Oh, gosh. I'm still embarrassed about it.
Everybody loves it.
Why did the snake cross the road?
I don't know.
To get to the other mesa.
There you go. Yes. Yeah, so that's the one you told the woman at Felonies. And I don't remember her reaction. She was probably confused, but she was just like, okay, come in.
She was really nice.
She was really nice. And service there was thoroughly wonderful and splendid. Like, everybody there was great.
We had our own little private scene.
Oh, yeah.
It was so amazing.
I love
our little, like, see-through curtains all around our table.
Yeah. I love any bar that's kind of dark, intimate, with all these little, like, little nooks. Like, this was a pretty spacious bar with a wraparound bar and, like, different lounge chairs and sections and, like, high chairs. Like, it was great. And we got our own little section surrounded by this, like, red mahogany curtain. So we kind of felt like we're hiding away in a fort, which is always what I want when I'm having cocktails.
Yes. And I remember they made that old-fashioned on a tableside cart.
I know. Very impressive. This is probably the first time we've had, like, tableside mixology at a national park, I think, or near a national park. And that really reminded me, like, anything served off like a bar cart just totally reminds me of, like, being in our loft in Chicago and all the drinks you used to make from that bar cart. That was, like, your thing.
I remember that. Yeah, Kerouac's cart.
I know. Oh, yeah, you, like, branded it. You had, like, customized coasters that you stamped with this.
I had on my own menus and everything. Yeah, I was a little bit of a nerd. I still am a nerd, but that's fine.
I mean, I loved it, obviously. I benefited greatly from that. And then anytime we would have company over, it was such a hit because everyone would be so impressed. And you would have your own little wood chip smoker for smoked cocktails.
Like, yeah, I'd do those glasses. I made my own bitters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you really did. Maybe we should just, like, open our own speakeasy. I think that's what you need to do.
No, let's just keep on returning to the Felonies.
Well, they're great. They do a good job.
They do great, yeah. And their charcuterie boards, they were also so affordable. They were just...
Yeah.
They're a little gem because I was not ready for that to be there.
No, I wasn't ready for any of this. This charcuterie board, these cocktails, this wonderful service, the whole vibe. That place is an absolute must. So it's definitely worth seeking out and going down this alley that you feel like you shouldn't be going down because it's where you want to be. And then, so yeah, we went to it twice. I think after the second night we were there, after drinks, we were talking about going to this bowling alley in town just down the street. And it was like a legit old school Americana bowling alley called Rose Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so very good, like really awesome. We got some local beers there. And I also like bowled the best game of my entire life. I've never bowled that good before.
Yeah. And the other place that we really liked was that Backstreet Bagel Company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was really good too. I'm like kind of getting more into bagels lately, as if I'm just discovering them or something. Like,
yeah,
they're
you're
really,
a little
really
late
good.
To that party.
I know. Here's the thing. Like, I've never been much of a bagel person because I think when it comes to like circular carbs, I guess I prefer donuts.
You're only allowed one circular carb?
Only one. You can't like both.
So it's either bagels or donuts.
Right. So, but I think I've come around to the fact that I think bagels are actually great pre-hiking food, or at least they're like much better than donuts because I don't want to have like this sugar rush and then crash while I'm on a trail. And Backstreet Bagel Company right in downtown Montrose, or downtown with, you know, quotes around it. This place had great bagels. And I remember the first morning I went, I had a local specialty, a green chili bagel.
I love green chilies.
I can't say no to a green chili anything. And then on another morning, I went in like kind of the opposite direction. I got something sweet. I got a blueberry bagel, which is a little taboo for bagel connoisseurs. And the thing that made it even more taboo was I got it with vanilla raisin cream cheese. So basically frosting. I basically had like a little bagel cake sandwich.
You really don't have a sweet tooth though, right?
That's what I like to tell people.
Yeah. You know, I'm more of a savory bagel guy myself, and I'm usually pretty simple with my bagel tastes. I just like plain cream cheese on a classic bagel.
Yeah.
Solid. And nice, I love old-fashioned donuts. So it's like...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm. Just saying.
I love
pretty
how...
plain.
Yeah. And you like old-fashioned cocktails. Like, I love how thoroughly classic your tastes are and how utterly insane mine are. I'm like, oh, yeah, give me a blueberry bagel with, like, vanilla frosting, please.
Well, it's like your style, you know?
Yeah.
It's all over the place, and I love it.
A little zany, yeah.
Yeah. But we do have the same taste about national parks, at least.
We do. And that's what matters, so. We'll be back with more of the Parklandia podcast from iHeartRadio.
Radio. I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery. But that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which is morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
Today we're talking about Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park.
My favorite.
And with that, it's time to wrap up with our segment on our favorite things at national parks that we visit.
Yes, it's that time. And today, obviously, we're going to share with each other our favorite thing about Black Canyon of the Gunnison. And neither of us know what we're going to say. So I have my secret little favorite thing. You have your secret favorite thing. Do you want to go first? Do you want to share what your favorite thing about Black Canyon was?
My favorite thing about the Black Canyon was getting to spend that quality time with you. I feel like we were like in a rush in the like couple weeks before that. And getting there, it just allowed me to finish my work. You know, you got to do your own thing, but then we got to spend that day like solid together. You know, mm-hmm. I turned on airplane mode and we just enjoyed the park.
Yeah. That's true. This was a nice little, this compared to other national parks that we've been to, especially during this time frame, I feel like Black Canyon was more laid back and comfortable and at a good steady pace. And also just Montrose is very enjoyable and kind of set the tone.
And honestly, the historical value of it all. I mean, what they had to do to get through there and to survey it. I mean, that was beautiful. But spending the time learning with you, that's what I loved.
Aw. Always so sentimental and sweet.
What is yours?
Mine would probably be that Oak Flat Loop Trail. And although I said, I think in general, I prefer the hiking trails in the North Rim for a variety of reasons, this trail stands out because, one, it dips below the canyon rim a little bit. So you get a taste of that without having to descend like all the way down to the bottom and like have some, I think I would be like terrified of the heights and stuff. It sounds really primal. But so that was fun. And it was like a somewhat sizable, mildly challenging trail, which I always seek out. But the thing that obviously made it really exciting for me was my bear sighting.
Yes.
The best. That was the best bear sighting. And this was, because I've been counting, I've been keeping track of this like a crazy person, the different national parks I've seen a bear in. And Black Canyon is by far the best. This was my favorite sighting, my closest sighting, while, you know, still being safe. It's not like I was like running into it or anything like that. And it was just great. I'm really glad I got to have that little moment. and then take the photos, and it was just standing perfectly still, like it wanted me to do so. So I
yes. did.
So now, what three things would you take to Black Canyon if we were to return, which we will?
Well, I would actually really love to camp there. So, and I'm talking about tent camping. So I'd love to bring a tent for that.
Mm-hmm.
Some firewood, if it's allowed, because if depending on the time of the season, just like every national park, there's like danger times and non-danger times. And I would definitely make sure to bring my like professional camera if I was down there hiking through it, because that would make for the best photos.
Yeah, that's true. Especially since the river and like the inner canyon is so far away and deep. It's hard to capture that in just a phone. Like, you get a sense of it and it looks amazing, but it'd be nice to like capture more of that detail and depth of the Black Canyon.
Yeah. What about for you?
For me, I would say, keeping in mind that like next time I would, you know, would like to at least tempt going into the inner canyon. Great shoes with a great footing. Mm. I don't want to be slipping and sliding to my death. And I also think it's important here, especially here, to have like leggings or something. I've been hiking increasingly with those because they provide good sun protection and bug protection while still being lightweight enough that they don't like make me feel overheated if it's sunny and hot. And so I would want something like that, and also maybe something for my arms in a similar format, because I've seen those in different stores, like hiking stores, and I don't have them yet, but I want them. And then
I think you're more of giving me like a birthday list than your favorite things.
Yeah, I'm conveniently naming these things I want two weeks before my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the third thing I guess I would bring would be similar to your camera thing. I would bring binoculars. I think this would be a particularly great park for that.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because the canyon is very, very deep, and it's hard to really see any detail down there. You can see like the white water from the river like in the far distance, but I want to be able to like see the details aside from like the east portal view. I want to be up by the painted wall overlook, and I want to be able to look down and just get a better feel, and binoculars would be really great for that.
Well, what I think is great is that we pretty much are going right into our dream vacation, which it's camping for myself. You know, those trails and that hiking for you. I mean, it's just amazing, because that's, I think we're talking about two parts of the same trip right now.
Essentially, yeah.
I'm talking about how we're going to sleep, and you're going to talk about how we do what we want to do, so.
Right, yeah, because ultimately my dream here would be to do one of these inner canyon hikes with you to the river.
Yes.
I don't want to do it alone. Like, there are some, like, really hardcore hikes that I'm happy to do on my own, and I do, but this is something I think I'd be too nervous to attempt because it's so far outside my comfort zone. And I know it would be really, really strenuous and probably terrifyingly steep, but it is one of those like bucket list experiences that I think I would love to do one day. Just psych myself up to it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, facing fears is the best kind of bucket list experience. I mean, it's just like those intense cave tours at the places like Carlsbad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally like similar kind of mindset. As long as we're not crashing down the Gunnison River on a rubber mattress, I'm down to try anything. You've been listening to the Parklandia Podcast, a show about national parks by iHeartRadio.
Created by Matt Kerouac, Brad Kerouac, and Christopher Hasiotis.
Produced and edited by Mike Johns.
Executive produced by Christopher Hasiotis.
Special thanks to Gabrielle Collins, Crystal Waters, and the rest of the Parklandia crew.
And hey, listeners, if you're enjoying the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people like you find our show.
You can keep up with us on social media. Check out photos from our travels on Instagram at Parklandia Pod, and join in the conversation in our Facebook group, Parklandia Rangers.
Thank you so much for listening.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.